Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
Well, with Mark off today, back tomorrow, Orlando sitting in. So let us get to question O. And this one comes in from Jaden, who asks, Orlando, I heard you earlier say you think the Broncos will win 9 games this year. Where's all that optimism coming from?
Better coaching staff. I think the Broncos got it right with Juwan James. You know, a bit overpaid, but you got it right because you needed to shore up that position. You needed a young person. You can't continue to just get backups or older veterans to play that position because we saw over the last 5 years them switch up that position. I think it's been 11 different starters since I started at the right tackle position for the Broncos. I think they hit it right on the head with Dalton Risner. Mike Munchak is going to be able to get Garrett Bowles in check and Connor McGovern. I don't know who's going to play the right guard position. I don't know if Ron Leary's going to be there. But I do truly believe that they got better. And with Rick Scangarello and Joe Flacco, I truly believe that they need each other. And because they need each other, it's now a match made in heaven. Because Joe Flacco needs Rick Scangarello in order to get his career back on track. He just walked out of Baltimore, a place that he won a Super Bowl, was a Super Bowl MVP for a guy that was a rookie in this league. So I think Rick Scangarello Joe Flacco is very motivated to get back on top of his game, but also Rick Scangarello is going to need Joe Flacco because this is the first time that he's calling plays. So the Broncos are on paper a better team, but there's also a lot of motivation with these coaches and a lot of familiarity. I mean, you talk about Rick Scangarello and the tight ends coach already working together in Atlanta under Kyle Shanahan. You got Ed Donatell that has worked very close with Vic Fangio. You know, I love the fact that Vic Fangio said, okay, I'm going to be the head coach, but I want to be on the sideline, something that I've never done before. I've always been up in the box, so let me go get my guy in Ed Donatell. And he's going to be a guy that he's going to be his eyes, his ears that are up there in order to call that defense, because I'm sure Vic Fangio is going to do a lot of calling that defense from the sidelines this year. So very optimistic about this team this year.
And but you don't go to 10, though. You won't go to 10.
I won't go to 10. 10 games in the NFL is hard, Mike. I don't care what anybody tells you, man. I played in this league for a long time, but 10 games is hard. And 9 games from winning 6 before and 5 the year before that, I'll take that any day of the week.
Why is winning 10 so hard?
Double digits. It's just, if you win 10 games, you think that automatically that you're going 4-2 in your division.
Right.
This division, Kansas City, 12-4 team last year. LA Chargers, 12-4 team. That's a wild card spot last year in this division. So I think that I truly believe that the Chargers are the best team in this division right now, as far as all around team. I think that the Chiefs, they just have a really special player in Patrick Mahomes, and you just don't know what's going to happen. But I think the Chiefs got a little worse this year because you don't know what's going to happen with Tyreek Hill, and you also got rid of Justin Houston and Dee Ford. Now, I mean, granted, you got Clark in there, but now you just have one edge rusher, where last year you had two edge rushers, and you also had Chris Jones. The inside linebackers
and your defense still stink.
Yeah.
Still stunk.
And KC's inside linebackers not that good. You traded away. You went and got the Honey Badger, which is an upgrade. But I truly believe that the Chargers are ahead of the pack, and I don't know if the Broncos win against the Chargers this year. And for me to go to 10 games, I'm saying that they have to be 4-2 in this division, and right now I don't see that happening. 3-3, yeah.
3-3.
Yeah.
3-3. So that's why. So 3-3 in the division versus 4-2, that's right there. That's why you can't go to 10.
Yeah.
If I could give you a scenario in which they go 4-2 in the division, sweep the Raiders and split with the other two teams, now you're more than willing to bring 10 into play.
Yes.
Before long, I'll have you matching Nick Ferguson.
No, you won't.
With 12.
No, you won't. Can't get me to go there. They're 9-7. Great year. You know, great, building year for the Broncos, young team, and
so
I got to look at a guy like Emmanuel Sanders coming back from an Achilles injury. Historically, when guys have had Achilles injury, they don't get to full strength until 2 years after that injury. So do I believe Emmanuel's going to have a great year? Yes, I do. But historically, with the numbers, it says different.
Boy, we're talking about a game here, a game there. 9-7. You tell me right now 9-7. I'll take it. Yeah. I'll run with it. Because not only are they playing meaningful football late in the season with a chance to make it to the playoffs, but 9 wins, what would happen in 9 wins would make you feel good about the direction that this franchise is going in.
Yes.
All that would happen with 9 wins. Would you feel the same way if they went 8-8?
8-8's an improvement.
Just one game.
8-8's an improvement. What is 500?
Is there just something about 8-8?
The expectations is not for the Broncos to just be 500. I think 8-8.
Talk about one game, Orlando.
I think a lot of coaches, a lot of people on this team, they would be happy to be 8-8, especially with the last couple years. But expectations, and for Broncos country, it's 8-8 is just not good enough. 9-7, we're one away from 10.
Do we have to change, though? Do we have to change what is the standard right now? I'm not saying we completely
turn our
back on the standard of Super Bowl or bust, but you got to also
be
realistic at some point about where we've been and where we're trying to get back to, and understand that
you never change
there's
the standard.
Some steps that you have to take.
You never change the standard for when you bring in a guy like Joe Flacco. You never change the standard by keeping guys on the team like Derek Wolfe, Von Miller. You never change that standard by now making sure that Chris Harris Jr. gets in the building. You can't change the standard. These guys know what it takes to win a Super Bowl. They know what it takes to go deep in the playoffs. They have all been there before. So you don't change that standard. When you make a complete overhaul and you get rid of your veteran players, that's when you change the standard. But right now, for me, the Broncos should be right there every year. The Broncos, 8-8. 500? No, I don't want that. I need at least 9-7.
Yeah, I wouldn't be upset with 8-8. I really wouldn't, because I recognize the division they play in, and there isn't another team, or in this case teams, I'll add the Raiders to the mix. There isn't another division like this.
Yeah.
Where you're sitting there saying, wow, not only are you trying to meet or surpass the standard of one team, it's two teams.
Yeah.
You're right. Both those teams won 12 games last year. They both figure to win 11 or 12 games this year. I mean, that's daunting stuff, and you got to play them 4 times.
But that's because you've already changed your standards, though, Mike. You're already looking at it saying, hey, the Broncos might be at the bottom of this division. So you're saying 8-8. I'm good with that.
Well,
I'm looking at it right now as the Broncos. Hey, you're third. You're over the Oakland Raiders, and because of what is the tradition of this team and what is expected from this community, that 8-8 is just not good enough.
Well, I'm all for, you know, going with the stereotype of, hey, we're the Denver Broncos, we're Super Bowl or bust. Here's the reality: they're 16-28 in their last 44 games. I mean, that's not just some small sample size. That's 44 games of NFL football over almost 3 years in which they're 16-28. I think you have to be realistic when you look at that. And then also factor in who you play in your division, some of the teams you're playing outside your division. 8-8, I'd be okay with 8-8. 9-7, I'd be very happy with. 10-6, I'd be ecstatic. You can't do everything that they did this offseason with all the coaching changes, bringing in Joe Flacco, and still go out and go 7-9.
Yeah.
You can't do
you
that.
Can't do
you
that.
Can't do that.
I agree.
That's you just can't. But 8-8.
8-8, like 2011, John Fox. You okay with that?
Again, it's from where you were.
The year that made you get a tattoo?
Well, come on. That was, remember, hey, when John Elway took over this team, John Elway did not shy away from the idea that you guys were rebuilding.
Yeah.
Okay? He did not shy away. And we saw him every Sunday up in the box, looked like he was chewing on glass as he's watching, you know, the Tebow show play out, right? Yeah. And all that was happening before Peyton Manning was even an idea.
Yeah.
So this is a guy who was okay with the idea of them facing a rebuild. And then it all changed with Peyton Manning. You can go back, if you can think back to what it was prior to Peyton Manning, then I think you can be okay with 8-8.
How do you go back and think about that, though? I can't.
I mean, I was here. I was watching it. I was covering the team. I knew where they were, what was realistic at the time.
And I can't go back to thinking that way, especially when you bring in Joe Flacco and John Elway now says
so you're
that
saying
this
Joe Flacco,
guy is
Joe
in
Flacco's,
his prime.
Well, okay, then what you're selling me on then is the idea that Joe Flacco could have a Peyton Manning-type impact here.
I'm selling you on the
Not
idea
Peyton
of,
Manning
of
impact,
John Elway it? Saying that Joe Flacco's in his prime.
But what does that mean? Peyton coming here means
you're, at least 9-7 your first year.
Oh, okay. All right. I see where you're going there. So whereas Peyton is, once you find out that Peyton Manning's still Peyton Manning, now you instantly start thinking, hey, we could win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Whereas here, hey, Joe Flacco still has something left to give. Now we're talking about 9 wins, maybe 10.
Yeah. When Peyton got here, you got to remember he came in. And you got Chris Cooper at the right guard position, me at the right tackle, J.D. Walton, Zane Beatles, Ryan Clady. You had your starting five offensive line. Joe Flacco's coming in. It's kind of like, okay, Dalton Reisner. Okay, we have him at left guard. What are we doing with Joe? What are we doing with Garrett Bowles? Connor McGovern, are you going to be able to snap the ball to him? Juwan James, are you really worthy of being the highest paid right tackle? And who's going to play the right guard position? There's a lot more questions. And you also got to remember in 2012 when Peyton comes here, it's not like he comes out and he starts lighting it up.
No,
we're struggling.
Yeah,
until that San Francisco,
yep.
Until that San Diego game,
yep.
That, when we come back from 24,
yep.
Nothing. We're struggling before
that. Atlanta
game? Trying to figure it out. Like, does he have it still?
Right.
The Atlanta game, I think he threw a couple interceptions.
Early on.
I had 2 tackles the Atlanta game. And I'm wondering what's going on
right.
At this point.
Right. All right. Here's a bonus question, O, would you rather have Dak Prescott or Joe Flacco?
Dak Prescott.
Really?
I'm torn between the two because Joe Flacco has 26 games where he's won at the end of the game. So he understands defense.
Yeah.
But Dak, in a league where these edge rushers are so good and the Broncos offensive line right now, it's better, but it's not a great offensive line. I'm going to go with the quarterback that can extend the play with their feet. And that's Dak Prescott.
Oh, once again, you're giving me that cliche of I need a quarterback that can make something out of nothing. No, I need a quarterback. So it's funny because Mark has always said that the most important thing is you need a quarterback that can run on the 70-30 principle, meaning 70% of your offense is done on schedule. 30% of it is off schedule.
Hey,
and I'm more interested in having that quarterback who can make hay when it's 70%. And it's interesting that 70-30 number, which Mark has talked about for the last few years, because Pro Football Focus, one of their stats based on their data is that quarterbacks operate with a clean pocket 70% of the time.
Yep.
So what am I interested in? Am I interested in a guy on the 30% chance that the play breaks down can make something out of nothing? Or would I rather have the quarterback who 70% of the time is going to go out there, he's going to find the matchup, where to go with the ball, and increase the likelihood of big plays?
Well, Dak Prescott is
doing that. I'd rather have that guy.
He's getting rid of the ball.
Listen, Dak Prescott's a good, solid quarterback, but Dak Prescott's been in this league 3 years. He's yet to throw for 4,000 yards in a season. His high water mark for touchdowns is 23. He's got 23, 22, and 22 in his 3 years. He yeah. doesn't throw many interceptions because he's not asked to do a whole lot. But, you know, Joe Flacco's got a much better, bigger playoff resume. I mean, the one thing is about your 9-7 prediction is that, hey, listen, if you could just find a way to get into the playoffs, all of a sudden I get a chance to go into the playoffs with this defense.
Light bulb goes on for Joe Flacco.
And Joe Flacco, who can look around and go, yeah, I'm in familiar territory. I know what this is all about.
Mike, you give me one more offensive lineman, or you give me Ron Leary of 2016.
Right.
and them, I'm willing to say, okay.
You're willing to go to 10.
Yeah, I'm willing to go to 10, but I'm also saying at the same time that now I'll take Joe Flacco this year over Dak Prescott.
Okay. But you take Dak right now.
Take Dak right
and
now.
And by the way, this isn't about
just because of the offensive line situation.
The future and everything. We're talking about right now for 2019.
For the Broncos and how their team is structured, I think Dak Prescott would be a little bit more successful than Joe Flacco would be.
Because you'd have a chance to use a mobile quarterback in this offense a little bit.
Joe Flacco's going to, right now, on paper, with the guys that you have, the Juwan James at right tackle, the Ron Leary at right guard, Connor McGovern at the center position, Dalton Reisner at the left guard position, and Garrett Bowles at the left tackle position, Joe Flacco's going to have to be able to escape some pressure at some point. He's not going to just be sitting back there in the pocket and making all the reads and getting the ball down the field. No, there's going to be a couple times where he's going to have to make something happen or be able to extend the play.
You're saying that 70-30 split may not be in place here? Might be more like 60-40?
Yeah.
Okay.
Might be a little bit. So you give me one more offensive lineman, or you give me Ron Leary of 2015, 2016 Ron Leary, right? Then I'm saying, okay, with Joe Flacco, he could run the show. Now we might be at 70-30, but right now it's 60-40.
How about this? Okay, so if I could tell you right now, 7 out of every 10 dropbacks for Joe Flacco, he's got a clean pocket.
I'll take it.
What's
this? You're a 10-win team.
You're, okay.
If that's the case. You are a 10-win team. 7 out of 10 times that he drops back, it's an absolute clean pocket. I'll take it because Joe Flacco has the arm strength and he understands defense. So even if on first down, there's a sack and you back it up and it's second and 16, now it's a clean pocket? Oh, I'll take it all day because he's going to be able to throw the ball down the field. He has arm strength. You got Emmanuel Sanders, Deshaun Hamilton, Cortland Sutton, Tim Patrick, Noah Fant, Phillip Lindsay coming out the backfield. I'll take it. If he drops back 7 out of 10 times, and that pocket is clean, the Broncos win 10 games this year for sure.
All right. I like it. Some more reaction on the RonaldSlot.com text line. Always encourage your text, 303-713-1043. Evans, you make me laugh. You're going to disparage Anthony Davis now? Oh, what he's done in the playoffs? Tell me you wouldn't take that guy or Kyle Kuzma on this team in a heartbeat. Dude, you make me laugh. So it still comes down to, Here's what I know about Nikola Jokic, a Nikola Jokic-led Nuggets team. It's an unselfish team. It's a team that I know is going to play together. It's a team that has now a nucleus in place that knows how to play together, that trusts each other. I don't know that is going to be the case in L.A. I don't know what all the pieces are going to be around Anthony Davis and LeBron James.
Got to build chemistry.
I don't know if Anthony Davis is, now that he's escaped the relative anonymity that is an NBA market like New Orleans, what's he going to do on the big stage where expectations are? You're here to deliver a championship. You're here to deliver a championship in year one. There's no doubt that the marquee looks good with LeBron and Anthony Davis, but what are you gonna add to all of this? Kyle Kuzma struggled with the very stern leadership of LeBron James. Now he's gonna have to defer to LeBron and Anthony Davis.
Yeah, everybody thinks that when you just put a team together that the chemistry is there from day one and you're supposed to just win. And that's not the case. I mean, we saw it in the NFL with the Dream Team with Philadelphia Eagles back in the day. That didn't work out, but on paper it looked great, and they were scheduled, and everybody was chalking it up. They're going to win the Super Bowl, but that didn't happen. You still got to create that chemistry. The Nuggets are in a better situation than the LA Lakers right now because they know they have the chemistry.
Yeah, I will say
they
this.
Know they know how to play together.
I will say this: the upside for the Lakers is bigger.
Yes.
We're in agreement there.
Yes.
You have to.
And the reason why the upside is bigger for the Lakers, because guys were taking pay cuts to play with LeBron. You don't think guys are really going to take a pay cut and ain't really consider going to play with LeBron and AD now?
It's interesting you just said that because, okay, if this texter thought I was disparaging Anthony Davis, get ready because I'm about to double down.
Yeah.
I want to go after LeBron James. I never felt that I was looking at the greatest of all time in LeBron James. And this only adds to it because at some point it needs to be held against this guy that he constantly feels the need to have to be surrounded by great talent. And that he will go out and he will search for, he will join up with, he will recruit, whatever. The idea that he needs other superstars around him rather than just going out and saying, here's my team, here's who I'm with, it's my job to take whoever we have and make them better.
Yeah.
Okay? He went to Miami to try to form a super team.
Well, they did form a super team.
Yeah, they did. He's in Los Angeles, and it took only 1 year for him, not even a full year, during that first year, to be actively out there recruiting Anthony Davis.
Yep.
And I understand that this is the way the NBA is now. It's a new NBA, but that doesn't mean I can't sort of hold it against guys like LeBron, the notion that why do you have to continue to go out and try to form these super teams? Michael Jordan didn't do it that way.
But Michael Jordan also had Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman. Those guys were really good at what they did.
How many legitimate...
We just associate super teams nowadays and superstars. We just associate that word or that saying with guys being able to score 30 a mm-hmm. night. Where back in the day, you had your three... But it might have been three that was completely different. One was a great passer, one was a great scorer, and one was a great defensive player. And that was the makeup of your three.
But the fact remains, Orlando, that you look back on Michael Jordan's career, how many legitimate all-stars did he play with? Two. Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
How many all-stars.
So isn't that a super team then? They're both Hall of Famers?
How many all-stars / future Hall of Famers will LeBron James have played with?
I'd give you three right now. Kyrie, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade.
Yep. Now you've got another.
You got AD.
Now you got another one now, right?
Yep.
So whether it's Miami, Cleveland, now L.A., the fact that he's moved around this much and that each time he was in a different stop. He felt the need to have one of these guys.
But it's today's sports. You got to recruit.
Oh, listen,
recruit,
I get it.
You get better. Recruit.
Just because I'm willing to acknowledge what it is now doesn't mean that I can't hold it against him.
It's bringing college to the pros.
Okay. It is exactly the way the rules are played. Yep. He's playing by the way the rules are. Here's how much the rules have changed. Tampering, which used to be an absolute no-no in sports. Even today, a team, an organization, can be fined $500,000 for any hint of tampering.
Yep.
But yet the players are allowed to just openly recruit. Openly recruit. And I get it. Those are the way the rules are. Doesn't mean I have to like it. And doesn't mean that when it comes to all-time debates, I can't hold it against these guys. And darn well I will.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan didn't have to do that. Michael Jordan never resorted to that.
You think guys were taking pay cuts to play with Michael Jordan, knowing that you go play with him, that you're going to get that championship? They
didn't have salary caps. Everything back then, it was different.
Yeah.
You won, what, six championships?
In professional sports, it's hard to get to that championship. I remember in 2013 with Champ, we're at the Super Bowl, and that's the first time that he's made it to the Super Bowl, a guy that's played at a high level for so long. So when you as a player have an opportunity to go play with a team that's right there, you're going to go there. You're going to take that pay cut because you're chasing that championship, because once you get it, nobody could ever take it away from you.
And part of me, too, is also just chapped by the idea that there's such an imbalance in the NBA when it comes to literally, you can be a crap team 1 year, and you can be a NBA finalist contender instantaneously because of the market you play in. And it bugs me that a team like the Nuggets here in Denver, which is considered a flyover NBA city, doesn't have that luxury. And they have to do it twice as good. They have to work twice as hard to be able to get to the same point that this one franchise has the chance to just cut a check or draw on the allure of, hey, it's Los Angeles, it's Hollywood, come on out here. And instantly they can change their fortunes. All right. Coming up next, how important is it that the Broncos name their stadium after Pat Bowlen? Would he want that? That's next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
All right. With the passing of Pat Bowlen, his induction ceremony takes on even more importance, more emotion. The fact that he will be going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame with his passing now fresh in our memory. And here's something that I don't think a lot of people know about. I didn't know about it, but it's been brought to all of our attention. The Pro Football Hall of Fame has a policy that inductees who have passed away do not receive, their families do not receive the iconic gold jacket and Hall of Fame ring. The idea, and this was in a 2016 statement, while the iconic bronze busts are created to memorialize every member of the Hall of Fame, the Hall of Fame ring and gold jacket are items presented to living Hall of Fame members to be worn exclusively by them as evidence and pride of their having been elected to sport's most elite fraternity. At no time in its 53-year history has the Hall of Fame presented either of these personal adornments posthumously or retroactively to a family member of a deceased Hall of Famer. Came up most recently with Junior Seau and Ken Stabler. And unless this policy changes, nobody from the Bowlen family will be given a gold jacket or a Hall of Fame ring. What do you think of this policy?
That's just wrong. It's truly wrong. The family should be able to get that jacket. The family should be able to get that ring. And maybe it's something where the Hall of Fame now frames it for the family and it's not to be worn and they give you it framed. But you got to think about a guy like Pat Bowlen, Junior Seau, Ken Stabler. You got to think about the sacrifices that those guys had to make. You know, the time that they spent away from their family in order to be elected into the Hall of Fame and to have the stamp that they have in the NFL, on the NFL. So the family should be able to see that and have basically a memory of these great guys that have made it to the Hall of Fame and been elected, but they should be able to have that memorabilia in their possession where they could see it on a day-to-day basis.
Do you think now we don't have much time. It's middle of June.
Yeah.
This is happening in about a month and a half. Do you think that there's enough time for us, for you as fans out there, to be able to apply enough pressure to change this policy?
I truly believe that there's enough time, because if you have enough voices, it doesn't matter about time. It will get done. So I just believe that the Hall of Fame has to think that and look at this situation in a completely different light, because Pat Bowlen was alive last week. He was already elected. We already knew that Steve Antonopoulos was going to give a speech and give him his jacket. Like, we already knew these things. It's just, unfortunately, because of health issues, he's passed on.
Now, this is the first time that a Hall of Famer has passed away between his election and enshrinement.
Yeah.
You know,
which is completely different and should hold the point and should hold merit. At the end of the day, the Hall of Fame should be looking at that. But it's also just wrong for Junior Seau's family not to get one. and Ken Stabler's family not to get one. So they need to make it right. And they have a perfect opportunity right now with a guy that is the first time that he's been, it's already passed through that he's been elected to the Hall of Fame, and then he passed away. It's already done, where now they could go back and right their wrongs, essentially.
I guess if, do you think that somehow the living members of the Hall of Fame would somehow have a problem with that? That's the other part of this, is that, do you honestly think that if you're a current member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame and you show up every year for the ceremonies in Cannes and you bust out your jacket and you get your ring on, you think that somehow you're going to look over and if somebody from the Bolin family is holding the jacket and holding the ring, you're going to look and be like, well, they don't have the right. They haven't earned the right to have that.
Yeah, nobody's going to say that. Nobody is ever going to say that. Everybody is going to just look at what Pat Bolin meant to the game of football, what he meant to the Denver Broncos organization. They're going to look at Junior Seau in the same light, and they're going to be happy that their family now can have a piece of memorabilia that, you know, is truly what everybody thrives for. When everybody comes into the NFL, everybody has hopes and aspirations to now, you know, get one of those gold jackets at the end of the year. And unfortunately, these guys are not here to wear their gold jackets, but their families should get that same pride and be able to look at that each and every day, because these guys have made a ton of sacrifices. You don't just show up in the NFL and just go to work throughout the course of a season and all of a sudden get a gold jacket.
Okay.
No, you're still making sacrifices in the off season, during the season. That's how you get a gold jacket.
Here's the other thing, though, is that, look, there are members of the Pro Football Hall of Fame who are no longer with us.
Yeah.
Who have passed away. What do you think happened
to their jackets?
With their jackets and their rings.
Yeah. One of their family members
have
it.
There's a good chance those were probably passed down, right?
Yep.
So how is this really different?
Yeah.
Boy, that's a, you know what, in a modern world, I was not aware of this until this was just brought up today. I'm stunned, really, that a league, I mean, let's face it, it's the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but it's the NFL Hall of Fame. And
yep,
it just seems to me that a league that is, works in conjunction with this Pro Football Hall of Fame, how this policy is still in place. It's got to change. Duff is putting together some of the information, ways that we can just, as Bronco fans, that you can just pepper the Hall of Fame. And you got to do it fast, because
yeah, it's right around the corner
and try to get this change, because it really does need to be changed. I just ask John Elway, ask Terrell Davis, ask Shannon Sharp.
Yeah.
Ask all those guys that owe so much of their success to Pat Bolin. You don't think that they would be front and center saying, absolutely, darn right, the family deserves a gold jacket and a ring. Make it happen. And you know what? I'm just kind of thinking out loud, but I would hope that those three especially would unite in a way in which, almost as a form of protest, that if it doesn't get changed, we're not showing up with ours.
Yeah.
To draw attention to the idea that this policy needs to change. You got three big hitters that could be front and center in Elway, TD, and Shannon Sharp.
Maybe protest the game.
Well,
the Hall of Fame game. Protest it.
Well, they wouldn't do that.
Why not?
Well, John wouldn't do that.
John's is probably a fine,
John,
right?
John's management now. He won't do that. But I'd like to see those guys come out and say, no gold jacket for Mr. B. We're not wearing ours. And we'll sit up there. Everybody else have their gold jackets on, and we won't.
Yeah.
And we'll draw attention to the fact that we don't have ours on.
Yeah.
So if this policy can't change between now and the ceremony, I would call on John, TD, and Shannon to do the right thing.
I would call on them too, but I'd also tell them, hey, listen, if Mr. Bolin's not getting that gold jacket, we're not showing up. You guys better figure out and put another team in this Hall of Fame game.
I don't know if Vic Fangio wants that. Vic Fangio wants the extra practice time.
You still get the practice time.
Vic Fangio wants the extra game. We've got to evaluate these guys. Come on. If we're going to get to Orlando's nine wins, or Nick Ferguson's 12. We need all the work we can get. All right, more reaction to this coming up on the RamosLive.com text line next. Reaction pouring in on the RamosLive.com text line, 303-713-1043, starting with this idea, this Pro Football Hall of Fame policy that says that if you have passed away, if you are going into the Hall of Fame, your family does not receive the iconic gold jacket and Hall of Fame ring. And as somebody texted in, well, they did it that way to prevent family members from fighting over the items or potentially selling them. My feeling is that the Bolin family is going to be fighting over things much bigger than a gold jacket or a ring.
Yeah.
Okay. But it still comes back to you can have the best intentions, but the fact remains is as your Hall of Famers get older and pass away, what do you think happens to these valuable heirlooms? Of course, they're probably passed down and they are potentially fought over.
And so, even if that's the case, let the family deal with it.
Right.
I mean, you have no right just to take it away from the family completely. Just let them deal with it. And like I said, I would like to see them frame these jackets, you know, and put the ring in a case where now you hand it to the family, and it might be a situation where it goes to his wife. And then whenever she doesn't designate it to somebody before she leaves Earth, I mean, she might go to the oldest child, and just so on. But everybody should have an opportunity to be able to see that in a family environment and be able to remember their father and be able to honor him as well.
Mike, Toronto is the reigning NBA champion, not exactly a hot market. Your small market flyover city holds no water when the current champs are from the north. Well, they did just win a championship with a guy who most likely will have been a one-year rental.
Yeah.
And by the way, you were able to get him.
The previous year had 50 wins, and then Coach Casey was the coach of the year.
Right.
And they shipped him out as well.
Right. This is not just some, you know, underdog franchise that came out of nowhere. I mean, this has been a good NBA franchise for a long time. And the only reason they were able to get Kawhi Leonard was because they already had a really good player in DeMar Rosen to be able to trade for him.
Toronto's also a unique city, though. I will tell you that. I hear the whole flyover market. But anybody that's lived in Toronto will tell you that it's not a bad place to live. It's not a bad place to be. Well, tax-wise, it's bad for professional athletes. But other than that, I mean, the diversity that is there at 2:30 in the morning in Toronto, I could eat Chinese, I could eat Mexican, I could get a great steak, I could get Indian food, Jamaican food, whatever I need at 2:30 in the morning. It's a city that never sleeps, and the people are so just genuine and friendly people. It's not a bad place to live. It would attract a lot more athletes than it'd be more attractive to a lot more athletes than what a lot of people would think.
Look, San Antonio did it. If San Antonio can do it, then sure, markets like Denver can do it. My point is not that it's impossible. San Antonio showed that it's possible. Yeah. Toronto just showed that it's possible. My point is when you're in a city like Denver or Toronto or San Antonio, you have to do it twice as good as those big markets out there that have the ability to simply flip their fortunes almost overnight.
But Toronto is a big market. I don't even know why we're saying that Toronto's
not.
It's not
a big NBA market.
Why isn't it?
It's in Canada, Orlando.
Okay, but you're the only basketball team that's in Canada.
Right.
So you're getting supported by everybody that's in Canada for the most part. So why isn't it a big market? Just because it's on the other side of the border?
Yes.
No. I mean, you got so much more fans are rooting for the Raptors than the Warriors.
But it's
And that's how it's going to go, especially after bringing a championship.
But up until this point, Toronto, or before that, San Antonio, was never going to be a market where free agents were going to go to that city with the idea of establishing a great NBA team. Nobody was going to say, all right, I'm a highly coveted free agent, and these teams are interested in me, and San Antonio is coming off a, you know, 20-win season, or Toronto's coming off a 32-win season. Nobody's going to those markets. And nobody's going to go to Denver.
With those wins and losses, yes. Nobody's going to go there. But with Toronto, go, but will they with go Denver
to,
now.
But will they go to Los Angeles?
With them winning now?
But my point is that you can be a 32-win team in Los Angeles or a 32-win team in New York.
And teams are still going to, people are still going to go.
And all of a sudden, those free agents are going to say, yeah, I'll go there, especially if I can team up with somebody else to go with me. We'll go there. But they're not going to just all of a sudden sit back and say, let's see. I can go anywhere I want to go, and I probably have a good chance of bringing somebody with me.
Yeah.
And let's see. Let's go to San Antonio. Yeah. Or let's go to Denver. It's not going to happen.
I think in the past, teams would say, why would I go to Toronto? Why would I go to Denver and play for the Nuggets? Why would I go to Toronto to play for the Raptors? But after what the Nuggets and the Raptors both did this year with the Nuggets, finishing the season with the 2 seed and, you know, winning in the playoffs and creating what they did, you know, and creating that chemistry and being able to draft well and develop guys and Toronto now winning the finals. I think it's going to be more of a question for these guys now of why not?
You hope to be able, if you're a Denver or Toronto, you hope to get, you know, San Antonio is the ultimate model. Okay. They built it up.
Yeah.
They did it the right way. And then they became, because they were so great, they became a place where other veterans were like, hey, look, I'm getting near the end of my career. I want to try to get a ring. This is a place to go to do it.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about all the work that had to be done by San Antonio just to get to that point.
But I think Toronto and Denver are now in that same circle.
You might be right. I don't think Denver's there yet. I don't think we're there yet. Because,
why not?
Well,
if I'm a team, I'm saying, hey, Joker, Jamal Murray, what these guys did last year, finishing the season, they're 2 seed.
What you're saying makes
complete sense. Get to play in altitude,
hey, listen,
so a little bit of an advantage.
What you're saying makes complete sense. And if that's the case, then if I'm Klay Thompson, I'm listening to the Nuggets.
Yeah.
But do you really think he will?
Why not?
I'm not saying
that's
why.
That's what I truly believe.
There's a difference between why not and he will.
I think that if the Warriors do not say, hey, you know what, we're going to give you a max deal multiple years, I think that then it's open business for Klay Thompson. And he will consider a team like the Nuggets. He will consider a team like Toronto if Kawhi Leonard leaves.
I hope you're right, but you have to realize that Paul Millsap represents, you know, the greatest free agent that the Nuggets have gone out and signed.
Yeah.
Paul Millsap.
Yeah.
All right. So you got to walk before you can run. Okay, when it comes to free agency, you're all of a sudden.
Well,
you're going to go from Paul Millsap to Klay Thompson.
I hope so. We walked with Paul Millsap. Now we're going to run with Klay Thompson.
I hope you're right. My feeling, though, is that we're still in that phase right now where we still have to do it twice as good as the big market teams do. We still have to do it that way. Now, hopefully you get to the point where this thing is all built to the point where they go out and win a championship and they become the Spurs. And now all of a sudden teams are like, hey, I want to go there.
I'd be saying that right now. I mean, you got to the playoffs. You were able to beat the good San Antonio team.
You're talking about common sense, Orlando. Common sense does not exist in the minds of most NBA free agents who are factoring in where they're playing as much as who they're playing with. And the fact that where you're playing matters as much as because who you're playing with. And, you know, that.
So NBA free agency is different from NFL free agency, because I will tell you this. When I became a free agent, I could have got a lot more money to go to a New York. But I wasn't going to go play with Geno Smith in New York I went to San Diego to go play with Philip Rivers.
Okay, but you can't argue with me that it would appear that when it comes to NBA free agency, the bigger markets seem to have an advantage. All right. Coming up, 10 o'clock, we're going to be carrying live for you the press conference with Joe Ellis and John Elway as they remember Pat Bowlen. We'll have that live for you here on The Fan at 10. Coming up, though, it's the Safety Blitz with Nick Ferguson. Straight ahead.